Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig, and I just wanted to give you an update. Over the last 9 months, in large part because of your listener support, we've managed to build this show into one of the top guitar and human interest podcasts online. As a result, we now have openings for a select group of businesses to advertise on and sponsor this show. And I thought you, as a listener, would be in the best position to make recommendations to business owner friends of yours who might benefit from advertising here on the Everyone Loves Guitar Show. So if you know a business owner who might profit from advertising on this show, have them connect with me by going to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertising. Again, that's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertising. I'd love to have a brief conversation with them to see how we might be able to help. Thanks for your help, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. I have just a real privilege and special to have such a wonderful blues player, guitarist, and just a great guy. We're with Kirk Fletcher, who's widely considered one of the top blues guitarists in the world, actually. He's a four-time Blues Music Award nominee, and he's played with a variety of popular artists, including a four-year role as lead guitarist of the Fabulous Thunderbird. He's also the front man of his own band, having released four studio albums, and we'll talk about some of the tracks off his latest album today, which I just found out. I had the pleasure of listening to it. It's really, really beautiful record, and it's called Kirk Fletcher, Hold On. Kirk also did a brief stint with the late Doyle Bramhall Sr. and a few guest appearances playing for Cyndi Lauper and Michelle Branch. He's also toured internationally as a member of the blues supergroup The Mannish Boys and as lead guitarist for the Italian megastar Eros Ramazzotti. Man, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you, Craig. I appreciate doing it.
All right, so you first started playing guitar with your older brother Walter in your dad's church.
That would be correct.
How did you get into this, and what were your early years of playing like?
Well, I got into it from my older brother. You know, just seeing him play in church, and it's something that I really can't describe because, you know, you see kids, being a father myself, you see kids in there just kind of, they do their thing. They do kid stuff. But I was always, since I can earliest remember, always into music. Always into guitar. I would sit there next to my older brother when I was just a baby for like the whole church service, which would be like 3 hours, and not even move, just sit there the whole time. I mean, how can you explain that?
Yeah, that is, that's just a gift, man. You know, it's amazing. There has been so many people come out of the church background that are just phenomenal, phenomenal players, man. It's just like a real, I don't know, man. I guess the spirit that carries forward creates deep spirits in music as well, man. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is cool.
So after a few years of that, you got turned on to blues. How did that happen, and what was the reaction of your parents? Because I know in a super religious family, the blues is a bit of a no-no.
Well, that's kind of an interesting thing because, like, my family is actually from Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Like you mentioned Michael Burks, and I think he was originally from Arkansas too.
That's right. Yeah, he was.
Yeah. So they were from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, which is maybe 60 miles or so outside of Little Rock, Arkansas. And they grew up in a time, you know, my father was born in 31 and my mom was born in 42. Pops robbing the cradle. No.
Hey, back in the day, that was like conservative. That was like nothing.
So, you know, they grew up in that era of like, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson and Howlin' Wolf and B.B. King. All of these people, that was like mainstream music for black people during that time. Yeah. So it wasn't like, oh, this thing, you know, it was just what they party to, what they dance to. It was, you know, so they would always mention this when I was a kid, you know, like this great fun music. And we used to listen to Fats Domino. And we used to listen to Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and B.B. King and all of this stuff on the radio. So it was just a part of their fun time. So I guess something about that kind of registered with me just being a kid. And I was like, man, I've always wanted to know about old stuff. That's the other thing. It's like music and also old stuff. I don't know why. I've just always been like that. So it always kind of intrigued me to, you know, find out, so what is this Muddy Waters and all this stuff about? You know, and when I heard it, it was like, oh my God. And I heard it, the first thing was maybe from my brother's record collection. My brother was stationed in Frankfurt, Germany, okay. When I was just a baby.
Which, and, same brother?
Actually, this was Cedric.
Okay.
CT,
yeah, yeah.
And he brought back like Bobby Bland, Greatest Hits, and a couple of things, you know. And I heard this on my little Smurf record player when I was a kid. I was Smurf like, oh my player. God, this is amazing. So that was kind of like the first thing, but I didn't really put two and two together until a little later. And yeah, I think that somewhere along the way, I heard on the radio or something, blues. I think it was KLON, a public radio station, maybe in like 83. I guess I was like 7 or 8, and I heard that, you know, they have blues like on the weekends or whatever. So I heard Little Red Rooster by Howlin' Wolf, and it was like, okay, this is amazing.
You were that turned on at that young an age.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's cool. No, I don't. I was like that. I felt that. Yeah, no, music's always been like that with me at a real young age. It's just something that makes you feel good, man.
Yeah.
Good. Sorry.
I was just going to say, it was a little odd, too, though, because, you know, this is the time of Michael Jackson and all of this Prince and all of this stuff coming out. But it's like, I liked that, and I like the blues, and I like Eddie Van Halen and all that stuff too. So it was weird, and I always felt a little shy about saying that I like Howlin' Wolf or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
because weird. Because like your kids in school, they wouldn't relate to it. Like shy with kids in school,
or maybe.
Yeah. I think anybody that's super passionate about anything at a young age is kind of like ostracized a bit because, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, with a skateboard or whatever the hell kids are doing at that age. And if you're not, then you're kind of like, oh, that guy's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, even if it's something really positive like music, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So you were with the Fabulous Thunderbirds 4 years. How'd you get hooked up with them? And what were you doing just before that musically?
Well, actually, I think I was with the Fabulous Thunderbirds for 3 years.
3 years? Okay, great.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, that's probably in print somewhere that it was 4 years, but I think it was from 2004 to 2007.
Okay, actually. Thanks.
And I was playing in Kim Wilson, the lead singer's solo band. So okay. I went from the solo band, and actually I'd done a stint with Charlie Musselwhite right before the Fabulous Thunderbirds. And that's kind of, I got a call, you know, I was already in contact with him. So
yeah,
I got
easy.
A call to fill the slot after Troy Gagne left. And yeah, I played with those guys and it was awesome.
It was a good experience.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it, you know, I was probably, I was pretty young. I was kind of young. And then kind of being in a band the first time with like-minded people and being a real fan of the Fabulous Thunderbirds, it was really cool. I probably drank too much and everything. But
that's what you do when you're young and playing in bands, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, how come did the gig, like it ended? What happened? Was it just time to move on or just...
Well, you know, there's a
I'm not like looking for gossip or anything.
Oh no. It was like there's a lot of reasons, kind of. You know, for one, I was in a band that I loved the music and everything like that. It was like I kind of felt like, but it's the Fabulous Thunderbirds. They've already kind of made their mark on musical history. And I was listening to all different kinds of music. I was like, what about my vision? What about my dreams of making my own stamp on music, you know? And, you know, it just ran its course. You know, I felt like I would, if I played, you know, in a different way other than what fit the music, it would be disrespectful to the music. So I was like, man, maybe I should just move on instead of just stay here and not really, my heart not being it really. Because it just ran its course. That's basically it, you know.
No, that's totally makes. I give you credit for that because it's that was probably a safe thing to do to stay in there and to go out on your own, especially from a safe thing, is like never easy, man. So I give you, you know, credit for doing that.
It was hard because, you know, Kim is like, you know, family too, you know, so that's the other thing. It's like, man, you know, this guy taught me a lot and I owe him a lot and it's one of my heroes, you know, so that it was definitely difficult, you know, but I was digging Jimi Hendrix. You can't be playing Purple Haze on the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
No, but look, it's good that you did your own thing because the pain of regret, had you not done it, man, that would have never left you forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I suffered too. I have to say, it was not easy at all. I suffered for like years. No money, no gigs, no nothing. Easy, you know.
No, but it's totally not easy.
Yeah.
Hey, for people who might not know him, can you talk about Doyle Bramhall Sr. and what he did, and what was that experience like for you?
Well, you know, I just done a batch of gigs with Doyle, but it was like incredible. First of all, Doyle is, you know, a fantastic singer from Texas that, you know, co-wrote some of Stevie Ray Vaughan's biggest hits, you know, like Change It, songs like that, and, you know, songs from the Instep record and stuff. And I've always just been a huge fan. And actually, my buddy, Nick Curran, God rest his soul, he was the guy that kind of hooked me up with Doyle in a way, because he was playing with Doyle after the T-Birds, too, because he left the T-Birds. I left the T-Birds. And he was playing with Doyle. And then Doyle called me to play, too. So it was this fantastic thing. Oh, wait a minute. I know. We were playing in, I think it was Finland or somewhere, on the same festival. I was playing with the Manish Boys.
Okay.
And Nick was playing with Doyle there. So I sat in with Doyle at this after thing. So that was when it all kind of went down. It was just like this thing that was just amazing. And yeah, that's the first time I played with him. So I guess I was kind of, you know, in his parameters.
In his circle. You're in the circle. He was a drummer, correct?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. What did you get any takeaways from that experience working with him? Because, I mean, the guy was just, like I would imagine, super bright.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like it was like this guy that super, you know, could play very fantastic blues drums and a great blues singer and everything like that, but also like a songwriter and also very creative. And, you know, just the stories and just that particular time in my life when I didn't have much money, I didn't have much of anything, and to have this guy come along and pick me up from the airport and take me to his house and watch TV, you know, and all that stuff, that was just, it just totally turned my mind around kind of about songwriting and all that kind of stuff. Mm.
Those random acts of kindness stuck with you as well, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of cool when someone does
absolutely.
That. Especially when you need it, man. And yeah. You got a great new album coming out. Hold on. I wanted to talk about some of the songs on there that I really liked.
Sure.
The Answer, man, that's a beautiful slow blues. Your singing is great on the whole record, man. Honestly, it's awesome. Really nice. The lyrics on there, I wish I had the answer. What's the backstory to that?
Well, you know, it's like just kind of being frustrated, but not wanting to be negative, kind of.
Yeah.
Being French.
I feel you.
You know, like with, you know, I wish I had the answer to turn my life around. You know, I don't blame you for leaving. And it's not actually just about a relationship. It's
kind of like you're reflecting
on yourself. You know, and my buddy Josh Smith actually helped me hash out the words. I kind of, you know, I'm such a baby when it comes to songwriting. So he helped me flush it out, you know. And like, it's funny because all of these things were like, after that, he went through this big thing that I won't get into because he'll probably tell y'all about that or whatever. But, you know, he had this whole thing in his life that came along, and it like the song took a whole new meaning, you know, for like both of us, because I had just moved to Switzerland, you know, and just I could really reflect on the U.S. and how it had been up to that point for me, you know, as a musician and regrets and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It was just this time, and it just kind of came out through that song. So that's a very personal, heartfelt song and has many meanings, you know. But I never like to be too, like, negative, because there's definitely enough negative stuff.
Yeah.
You know, always, you know, that's the reason why it has, like, that major part in there. What can it be, you know, just to kind of add hope.
Well, let me tell you, man, if you're in your infancy of writing songs, then that's great, because the writing on the album, and I told you before we started, is just phenomenal. I mean, it's just beautiful stuff on here, man. And I was real happy to listen to it. In that same song, you just mentioned that. I was trying to play along with it, you know, and I'm no genius, but like, I thought it was like D minor, and then it went over to E major. Is that, if you remember?
Yeah, right? Like that whole thing, you know, where it does the major thing.
You know? Yeah, and I thought it was like, you know, exactly what you said. My notes here is like, you got the great blues and then you deliver in the optimism.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But that being said, your solo is blistering on there. And I wrote down, I said, damn, what were you so pissed off at, Kirk? you were on fire, man. That was just like really intense, man. I was curious. I was like, was there anything going through your mind specifically when you soloed that? I was like super intense, man.
Well, you know, I'm not usually a angry person, but I feel that song is a real release for me. For every emotion, not just, you know, anger or being pissed off or whatever. It's just sort of like a release. And sometimes I can play it better than I can say it.
Yeah, you know? I hear you.
It's just, you know, I'm just trying to be a vessel and let the music just come through me. I know that sounds all, you know, whatever.
No, man. No, it is what it is. Right? You know, I mean, it's the truth, that's it, man. Know? No, that was beautiful. I was like, I listened to that solo over and over, and that was really intense, man. It was beautiful. Then another song, Time's Ticking, vocals awesome again. And so here's what I was like really curious about. In that song, you have a bunch of like really short fills, like maybe half a measure, right?
Yeah.
On a second guitar track supporting your lead. And you know, I listened to it over and over again. And what made it so clever is you'll be soloing in an ascending pattern on the high end of the neck, but the fills is just a few notes descending on the lower end of the neck. And I was like, man, that is so clever. So, like to me, and I said this again before, it in any art, it's the little subtleties like that take things from good to great. And I was curious how did you think to do that? Like, what prompted that? Because it's, you know, that shit doesn't happen by accident, you know?
Well, you know what's funny?
Maybe it did. Tell me. I'm working, you know, too hard.
I can't really play and sing at the same time, right? So I tracked the vocal with the band, you know? Okay. I tracked everything, and I just played fills, and I just done the second guitar. So the first guitar is just after I would sing something, right?
Okay, yeah,
the
first,
you know, initial guitar. And then after, I just filled in the holes, but I wanted it to be kind of raw. So I was kind of actually going for kind of a raw, spontaneous, just fill in the holes kind of thing. So it just kind of, that's how it kind of came out.
Those fills are great. I thought
because
that was.
I can't really play anything.
No, but that was fantastic, Kirk. I mean, really, really, you know, it made it, it's complex, but it's not complex. It's simple, but it, you know what I'm saying? I can't explain it. It's just really little easy feels, but the thought and the placement is not easy to do that or to think of it. And I thought that was super brilliant, man.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff is just, I'm trying to play something that makes me laugh or something, or just try and get an emotion across. You know, it's just like a conversation. Or I attempt for it to try and
it was good. It was great. Maybe I'll come on stage. Only thing I could do is play them fills. you need awesome. You need someone to do the fills. This is Craig. Awesome. He does the fills.
Yeah. Totally.
Is there a backstory to that? To that song in general?
Well, you know, that song was inspired by, John Hyatt, right? Of course.
Yes, of course.
Right. Well, he had this band with Ry Cooder, Jim Keltner, and Nick Lowe called Little Village.
Yeah.
And that song was a completely different thing. I came up with that song, I think it was, which song inspired it? I think it might have been Inside Job or one of those songs. I wanted to kind of do something like Inside Job from Little Village. So it was sort of like I was trying to do like this funky kind of weird Jim Keltner kind of beat and trying to make it all swampy and funky and all this stuff. And then I thought, like, that's cool, but why not just go balls to the walls, kind of more rock, but add the drop D guitar to it and make it more swampy. Oh, you know what it was? I know what it was. It was a combination of a Shuggy Otis song, I think called
Shuggy Otis. That's good.
Black
stuff.
Belt something, Black Belt or something like that. It's like off this Wings of Love record and sort of like a Dole Bramhall thing too. It's just that kind of swampy thing. Plus, you know, you got Tommy Johnson and the old country blues guys too. So it's just kind of my interpretation of all that stuff.
That's good stuff. Were you playing a Strat on that, if you remember?
You know what? I only played two guitars for the whole record, actually. It was on that song. You know, actually, I think that's just like a Mark Rutter's Telly, actually. Oh. Just straight up Telly, but, you know, through like this Tweed Pro style amp, like a Tweed Pro. So, you know, super loud in the amp right next to me will give you more, you know.
Now, the amp on that sounds different from the amp on the Answer. Was it different or was it just different distortion noise? Same one. Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Because that amp really, like, I feel that kind of circuitry in that amp, I can get pretty much any kind of thing I want out of it, you know. I think you interviewed, actually, George Marinelli.
I did, yeah.
On the Dr. Z type vibe.
Right,
you know,
right.
Well, that's kind of my version of that same kind of thing where you can do anything with the one amp.
Yeah, I get you. Hey, man, I like that you listen to that. That's cool. You know, it's funny because it's probably the same thing with you. Like, you know people are listening and, like, you see numbers or whatever, but you don't know anybody that's listening. You don't know, like, right? So when someone says, hey, man, I really like, oh, wow, I get that's it becomes sort of real. And I'm like that when people say, oh, you know, I listened to this. I was like, oh, okay, I guess it's not just numbers. You know what I'm saying? It's just weird. Like,
yeah.
You know. Anyway, thank you. Dupree. That was a cool song, man. That's like kind of a swing blues, but you got a badass jazz section in there. That B3, I'm assuming that's what it was, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That sounds fantastic, man.
Oh, thank you.
That was really good. And the soloing is in there with, you know, the jazz stuff that you do is great. What's the backstory to that song? What does Dupree mean? Like, is it somebody?
Well, that's Cornell Dupree, the famous R&B specialist guitar player, funky, amazing man who played on, you know, King Curtis, Live at the Fillmore, played with Aretha Franklin, Brooke Benton, had a band with Eric Gale called Stuff. Okay. You know, they had a band. So that's really my kind of tribute to New York. You know, like, well, it's dedicated to him, but it's also kind of a tribute to New York in the 70s and this club called Mikhail's. It's just like, I was born in 75, so it's no way I could have went to Mikhail's. But that song is just a tribute to maybe what you might hear at Mikhail's.
It was funky, man. I really like that. That was very cool. Now, you're not a New York guy, though. You said Arkansas and California.
No, I'm a LA guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, here, I just wanted to summarize this for the listeners about this record. First of all, it's a phenomenal record, and when it comes out, you should definitely get it. It's called Hold On. That's the last song on the record. And my notes were, and I told this to Kirk earlier, these are not simple songs, especially for blues songs. Like, most people, you get a blues album, you think it's a 1-4-5. This is far from it. I mean, this is, you know, really great writing. And I had a question. Did you study songwriting, or did you learn to write songs in a certain way or from a certain school of thought?
Well, I really appreciate that, and that makes me feel good, because I feel like such a basic songwriting, really, you know. But for me, I listen to, funny as it sounds, I listen to like a lot of old, really old country music, and like just really simple type, you know, subject matter. Like, you know how like Merle Haggard would sing like, you know, all of those drinking songs, like Tonight the Bottle Left Me Down or something. Excuse me. That's, you know, those songs, like, you totally are Conway Twitty. You exactly know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't have to mess around. You know what they're talking about. So that just appealed to me. And I listened to, like, all of the old blues and a lot of that kind of stuff. And I really tried to, like, figure out a way to bring that really simple subject matter into what's going on with me, you know, because I feel like I'm kind of the kind of person that always likes to break things down to the simplest possible way, you know. So all of the songs are kind of short, but they're really, really, really how I feel, you know, and I just try to be really direct. I mean, I also really love Joni Mitchell, but I ain't there yet.
Yeah, I hear you.
Probably never get there in this lifetime.
I don't know, man. These are great. I mean, to me, right, they're totally different style, but it kind of reminded me of how the Allman Brothers wrote songs. You know, they weren't, you know, they were blues songs, but they weren't, again, wasn't a 1-4-5. It was a well-thought-out, well-created song, and it was, you know, pretty deep musically as far as what was going on.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And these songs were great. So, man, I appreciate it. This is great. Everybody, I just want to tell you, when this record comes out, I think it's September.
Yeah, September.
Do yourself a favor and get your hands on it. It's called Kirk Fletcher. Hold On, and I'll tell you how to get it at the end of the interview. You talked about you're from Pine Bluff, and then you moved to California. What was your childhood like?
Well, actually, my family. I was born actually in California, born and raised. But
okay.
My family. Actually, all of my older two brothers were born in Pine Bluff, but they moved to California pretty early on, too. I'm sorry, the question you asked was how was my childhood?
Yeah. You can answer whatever question you want, Kirk. This is a real easygoing show.
my childhood was amazing.
How much older are your brothers than you?
Oh, my oldest, CT, is actually 16 years older than I am.
Oh, and he's the middle.
Yeah. And my oldest brother was 17. Yeah, just a year after.
Oh, okay.
They were a year apart.
Okay.
58 and 59.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So what was your childhood like? You said it was great.
Yeah. I mean, I had a really cool, you know, my dad was 44 when I was born, you know? So, I mean, he's a total different person, you know, he's just pretty mellow, you know, I mean, you know, maybe a little strict compared to other kids, but you know, we spent a lot of time together and he was cool, you know?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I had a question that I was going to ask you later, but since you brought up, I'll ask now. And if you don't want to answer it, that's totally cool. I saw an interview that CT put out when you and him were hanging out, you know, and he was bragging on you, and you could tell he was really proud of you, and which is real nice. And him describing your dad and you describing your dad is like two different people.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't
always just like two different people. There were still, you know, traces of him being, you know, I mean, he could be mean.
Yeah.
You know, but I just didn't, you know, I think actually you can have two people in the same house and they can have two different perspectives too of how it was.
Yeah.
You know,
and he was probably a different personality than you as well.
Yeah, CT. I mean, I would never fully understand what my brother went through.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it's my dad, because it was completely different times, completely different people, completely different everything. But I could definitely agree with him on certain things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I was just, you know, 16 years later, it's, you know, people change. You know, I mean, he still done things that I didn't dig, you know, but
what parent doesn't? Like,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. What parent doesn't? I'm sure your daughter, I know my kids have not been thrilled with every decision I made. I can tell you that much.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, my daughter is fantastic. We talk every day on the phone.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
You know, we're cool. You know,
that's great.
I miss her a lot being here in Switzerland, but you know, we'll work it out because we always have worked out everything.
Does she come out and see you once in a while?
Not yet. She's in school studying to be a nurse. So, you know, not yet. But she knows daddy's going to be there a couple months or whatever. So
awesome.
Kids are lazy these days.
just a bit. Just a bit. Let's not go down that. Remember, we said we don't like to be negative.
A whole different interview.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, what prompted you to move to Switzerland in the first place?
A woman.
There you go. never heard a musician say that before.
Yeah, right. a woman and the music, because I was actually playing over here almost more than I was at home. You know, just playing back and forth all the time. So it actually just worked out because my daughter was actually going away to college. And I was like, okay, you know, if I'm going to do it, we're in love, so I'm going to move.
Good for you, man.
Switzerland, you know.
Good for you. And for whatever.
And of course, it's my friends and everything, but, you know, maybe it was a good time to get out. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've seen pictures of you and your girl, and you guys look like very, like that couple. You know, you guys look like.
Yeah.
You got good vibes, you know, you can see that. So.
Yeah. She helps me out a lot, too, you know, because, you know, just having a support group, you know, because. You know, I haven't really had that really ever.
Sure, man.
I mean, people that are supportive, yes, I get it, and I appreciate everybody. But to actually live with a supporting person is like a whole different thing, you know, and it's definitely helped me out a lot.
Oh, my God. Hell yeah, man. No, I've been with the best thing I ever did. I've been with my wife almost, this is 26 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's a miracle. I don't know how the hell. I did that. It's the best decision. She's the same way, man. I couldn't imagine. I made some bad decisions. But that's a real good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That being said, I think guys that play the or guys, people who play the blues in general are working things out through their music. I think that's what they're attracted to. I think that's part of the attraction. You know, there's some like pain or stuff that blues music just you know, reaches in and taps in and allows you to work out. And I was curious if you're comfortable in your case, what is it you feel that you're exercising or the blues helps you exercise or work out?
Well, to me, my blues, blues for me is sort of like a way of life. And I know it's called blues, but I don't really look at it as sad music or anything like that. I kind of look at blues as just kind of just a way of life. Blues and being soulful to me are kind of one in the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, he's playing really bluesy or he's playing really soulful. That's kind of like the same to me, kind of in a way. So I think blues is soul.
Yeah.
Just being soulful and being direct and cutting out all the bullshit mm-hmm. and just being really getting straight to the point.
Yeah.
You know, and I like to get straight to the point.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm a blues guy primarily. I feel the same. It's a very redemptive and cathartic. It like just, you know, like it's just a mechanism to release. I find it.
Yeah. I like the release.
Yeah.
The part of it is, and, you know, just having something that you've done your whole life and you've listened to it your whole life and being able to communicate with people and having them like it and this whole like family of people and this whole thing is sort of like church.
Yeah.
But different.
Yeah.
Because you know, you can even be more raw.
That's cool, man. Hey, what are some of the bigger obstacles you've had to overcome throughout this journey, either personally or music related or business related?
Money.
Yeah.
Straight up.
No, I hear you. I mean,
more than anything, because, you know, you love to do it. You would do it no matter what and everything like that. But when it starts to interfere, when you're not making any money and you can't survive, really, then it starts to get pretty difficult and pretty challenging. You know, it's not like I'm even trying to be rich or anything like that, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When you start, like, you know, questioning, oh, okay, I need to get tires for my car, or I need gas,
yeah,
or
I need
that, then it starts to get a little bit difficult, you know. But luckily, I can play other kinds of music. I can kind of do other stuff too, you know, a little bit. So, I mean, there's always been a way. My guitar has always taken care of me in some kind of way, shape, form, or fashion. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the only time that it gets tough is when I'm not working. That's much it. But everything else, I mean, music, I've been the highest of the high, you know. It's like it's heaven on earth,
yeah.
You know, when it's right. When you're playing and when you're communicating, it's nothing better. No drug, no booze or anything. It's the best.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Mistakes. You know, we all pay some kind of tuition in our careers by the mistakes we make. And I was curious if you'd be kind enough to share one or two mistakes you might have made along the way and what were the lessons that you learned from those mistakes?
Sure. I think that the biggest mistake was not to start singing sooner. That was the thing, you know, and not to be. I've always been like a guy that wants to play with a lot of different people because versatility is one thing that I just love. I love all different kinds of music. I love all different kinds of guitar players. I love all different kinds of food. I've always been a person that likes a variety. But with that being said, I think it would have really helped if I had just started singing sooner. And to be my own man, it took me a long time to decide I wanted. It took me to just get my ass kicked a million times over to say, hey, man, maybe I should just be my own man because I'm thinking of how this, I'm making this other person sound good. And, you know, I'm doing all this stuff, but I ain't getting nothing.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
It. You know, just wasting my time and wasting my ideas on somebody else's dream and while my own dream. I don't even have a pot to piss in.
Dude, that is so righteous, man, how you said that, man. I appreciate that.
You know, I got to be real.
Yeah, man, that was freaking real. No, that's great. So if you had to give your younger self advice, that'd be the advice that you'd say, get out there and do your own thing sooner?
you know, actually two things. It would be that, and it would also be this, like, had stayed in school and learned a little bit more about music theory and harmony and all that kind of stuff. Because I find myself running into roadblocks and stuff like that, even composing a song or something, and I'll have to go on the chase, you know. I have to, like, stop and try and figure it out, you know. And it's kind of a long process, and, you know, learning music takes way longer for me because, you know, I don't really know that much.
Yeah.
You know? I know a little bit, but not, you know, crazy.
Well, that's a common thing that when I ask that question, I wish I knew a little more musical theory is probably 20% of the answers, you know, one in five. Yeah. So it's really common, you know, maybe more, maybe 25%. So it's a pretty common thing. The flip side to that, what have been some things you did that, like, maybe were outside of your comfort zone at the time, but you did them and it turned out to be really big breakthroughs for you?
Well, one thing was playing with Eros Ramazzotti, because that was definitely out of my comfort zone, because first of all, it's all in Italian. It's playing parts and, like, realizing how you have to learn a gig, because I grew up playing in church and playing funk and R&B and all that stuff. And you kind of, like, as long as you're playing the right chords and you kind of doing a reasonable job of the part and everything, that's cool. And, you know, it's funky and it feels good. So, that's awesome. But then when I done that gig, it was like, okay, you need to be able to play this music by yourself sitting in a room. You say, you take this song, Stella Jamella, or whatever song he had, and you need to play all the parts by yourself in a room alone. You know, so that was totally like an eye-opening experience for me. But, you know, I said, man, I'm going to figure this out. This isn't going to get me, and I'm going to just hunker down and learn it this way, and I'm going to do that. And it really did help. You know, after that, I really approached music in a different way and thought, like, oh, okay, well, I should learn this, you know, because even if people hire, you know, it's like if they're just reading charts or they don't really know the music, you can tell. Yeah. And it just doesn't make you comfortable, and you're trying to sing and put on the show and they're back there struggling. You know, that's not cool.
What kind of music does Ramazzotti play?
It's like Italian pop music, basically.
There's another guy in Italy, a big
Vasco Rossi. Vasco Rossi?
No, the guy with a hat. Cat Deasy plays with him. Cat, what's her name? Cat Dyson. Cat Dyson plays with him. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was. Isn't it Vasco Rossi, or is it another guy?
No, it's another guy with a hat. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. He's a blues guy, though. He's not really he's like an Italian blues guy.
Oh, man. I know that I would know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I know you know. I just can't think of the name.
Having a blank.
Yeah. It's amazing. Is there, like, a lot of Italian artists there that are like, super popular?
There are quite a few.
Interesting.
And it's sort of like their own thing. It's like, but, you know, actually, Eros Ramazzotti, we toured all around the world. Eros, so they're definitely an Italian market everywhere. We even went to LA, South America, Australia, everywhere.
Are you still playing with them?
No, I stopped playing with them, I think, in about 2014 or something, 13, 14.
Gotcha. So that was it was what?
It was cool.
So that was a big breakthrough for you, you know, learning that kind of music and learning how to play that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's financially
good,
too.
Good.
Especially financially.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Broke as I was.
Hey, man, let's talk gear for a few minutes. What's your go-to guitar right now, and what other two guitars would round out your top three?
Oh, man, I'm like a dyed in the wool. I'm, you know, the first guitar I would have to say is a Stratocaster. I mean, for better or for worse, and I know everybody thinks that I'm, oh, he's a Tele guy or he's this guy. I would say a Fender Stratocaster is the first choice, followed by a Gibson ES-335, and then third would be a Telecaster.
Do you have any cool stories about how you got any of those guitars?
Sure. Yeah. My Stratocaster is a, my main Stratocaster is a 1964 Strat.
Oh, wow.
I got that from Norm's Rare Guitars, and it was actually a really good, it was a refin guitar, and the pickups had been changed, so I got a really good deal on it. And actually, a friend of mine helped me get it. I didn't even have all the bread, and this lady named Mary Beth, who's a really good friend of mine, helped me out.
Shout out to Mary Beth.
Shout out to Mary Beth. And she helped me. She's like, Kirk, I'll help you, you know, and everything. So I owe her a lot. She's the total homegirl.
That's awesome, man.
And,
Is that burst? Is that a burst?
It is now. It was white before. It had some kind of thick white paint on it before. But I got it refinished by Chad Underwood, actually.
Where's he at?
I think Chad is in Kentucky, I think, now. Okay. I think maybe he lives somewhere else, but Chad Underwood. And he's built guitar. He makes Underwood guitars, and they're fantastic. Everybody plays them. Anson, Dole, Bramhall, a lot of people. But, yeah, he refinished it for me. And then on the Arrows tour, I kind of start eBay shopping for original pickups. So I got all original pickups and kind of just built it up and made it just like how I wanted.
So you got 64 Strat pickups.
Yeah, actually, wow. I got 65 because 65 is my year. I don't know what it is about. That's 65. Funny. It's like,
So you like AB'd 64 against 65 and you like the 65s better?
I like 65. I've played a lot of old Strat. And it's like more consistent, I think, maybe.
Interesting.
You know, because they're like a good friend of mine, Michael Landau, has two like 63, 64 Strats or whatever. And then, you know, Robin Ford, I'm a friend of his, and back in the day he had a 65 Strat and I always loved the way it sounded. You know, it just, and I've played a bunch of 65 Strats, and I don't know, I guess because they were getting ready to sell and CBS, they were getting ready to sell. Fender was selling the CBS in like 66, I think, 65, 66. So maybe they were trying to keep the quality control up. I don't know.
But you like the 65s. That's interesting.
I like the 65. And I like all of them. If it's a good guitar, I like all of them. But yeah. It seems like consistency from 64, 65 was just the bee's knees.
Very cool. I got Robin coming on here in a couple of weeks. I may ask him about that.
Beat. I wonder will he even remember that guitar. At that time, he was going through a lot of Strats. But
you know, it's funny. I had Jeff on last week.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me, Robin told him, don't play a Strat.
Yeah.
He said, when your sound when you play a Strat, you sound like everybody else playing a Strat. But when you play a PRS or a Les Paul.
Yeah.
So that was interesting, I thought.
Well, you know, what's funny is like with a Strat for me, I totally go for everything different just by the nature of, I guess, myself, how I am. He always said that he really liked the middle pickup on Strat.
Who, Robin?
Back in the day.
That's interesting.
That he always kind of gravitated towards the middle pickup back in like the Miles Davis.
There's videos on YouTube all over. I have to look at that.
Oh, yeah. And like, you know, the middle, the bridge. And then I just had a different kind of way I looked at it, you know, because everybody was doing the Stevie Ray Vaughan thing, and I love Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Sure.
But I just kind of, it was the only guitar I had, so I had to try and make it do whatever I needed it to do. So it's sort of a different approach to it, I guess.
What position are you playing in usually on your Strat?
Usually I will start off on the middle pickup.
Okay. So you were the same thing.
And then go to the bridge pickup. I mean, the bridge pickup, I live pretty much, most of my solos are on the bridge pickup, no matter what. Yeah.
Very cool. Any cool stories about any of your other guitars, the 335 or the Selly, how you got them?
Well, you know, actually, I have a very special Les Paul that's sort of like that is a special guitar. I don't really care for all Les Pauls, but this one is brighter and it rings really good and it's just fantastic and it sustains on every note.
It's a standard?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a collector's choice Nicky.
Was that
custom shop kind of thing? Yeah, like a custom shop guitar.
What is it, a reissue of a 58, 59 or something like
that? Yeah, it's like a reissue of Charlie Daughtry's old 59 flame top called Nicky.
Okay. I don't know who's Charlie Daughtry. I don't even know who that is.
This cat is like a fantastic collector, you know, and guitar enthusiast in the kind of Joe Bonamassa camp. You know, I met him through Joe Bonamassa. Great guy, great photographer, fantastic dude. But yeah, it's a copy of his guitar.
What's the best guitar and best amp you've ever owned?
Well, the best amp is my Super Reverb that I've had since I was probably 20. And it's kind of a bastardized amp. It's a Bandmaster Reverb in a Super Reverb shell with a different output transformer, two selection speakers at the bottom, and two original 10 at the top. So it's a
wow. Blast. Yeah.
But it's like everybody's played through this amp. Larry Carlton, Robin Ford, everybody's played through the amp.
So it's got good mojo, man.
Yeah, you know, it's my old amp, and that's the best amp I've ever played. I mean, yeah, that's my amp. And then guitar, it's a toss-up because I have a few guitars that I really like. My 64 Strat, and then the Les Paul. I have a Collins I-35 that I've, you know, put some different pickups in, and that's amazing. I have a Rudder's Tele and also another Tele that I got from Ron Ellis, and that's probably my favorite Tele of all time. Yeah, it's kind of crazy right now with guitars, but
that's a nice problem to have, Kirk. I'm glad you have that problem.
It's the first time ever that I've had this many guitars.
Hey, don't say it too loud.
I know, right?
Desert Island Discs, man. If I asked you to pick your top three Desert Island Discs in no particular order at all, and knowing that this could change for tomorrow, just like your knee-jerk reaction to the three that would come up right now.
Oh, man, that would be very difficult. Bobby Bland, Dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Bobby Bland, Dreamer. Actually, the Carpenters.
Okay, I wasn't expecting that, but that's awesome.
Close to You by the Carpenters.
Why? Is that like you listened to that a million times as a kid?
We've only just begun. Karen Carpenter
staying
her ass off on that song.
Yes.
Let's see. God, it's so many. I mean, you brought up Robin Ford. I mean, that Robin Ford and Jimmy Witherspoon live record from like 74 or something like that. Joni Mitchell, Miles of Isles. Oh man, there's too many.
There is too many, man.
That was already more than three. Sorry.
Hey, this question is totally optional. I know your dad recently passed unexpectedly. And so first of all, I'm really sorry for your loss, and you know, my condolences go out to you and to your family.
Thank you.
And I was curious, what was the most important thing your dad taught you, and him being a pastor, how did that impact your outlook on life in general?
Well, my dad was a man's man. You know, he was, you know, he gave me a big dose of just stepping up to the plate. You know, taking your fears head on and just dealing with it, you know. I mean, so that's the thing. And I took more of that in a more emotional way than a physical way. You know, if it's a problem, it ain't going to do nothing. It's not going to change anything. The problem is there, and you just got to take it on head on. Yeah. You know, so that's one of the big lessons I learned from my dad. And also that spiritual type thing, not to get into like a religious type thing or whatever. I'm not as much religious as I am spiritual, but the spiritual side of music, the spiritual side of life, the spiritual side of how I interact with other people, how I treat other people, is something that I know that he embedded in me at an early age. So those are the big ones for me. You know.
And that's very cool. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think like that, the golden rule, do unto others, is like a, I mean, it sounds corny, but like you really can't go too wrong if you sort of like, you know, follow that. It's really not that complicated, you know?
Totally. So, totally.
Best childhood memory?
When my brother was going to come over. Either one.
When either your older brothers would come over. Oh, because they moved out of the house. They were older.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool, man.
Yeah, that's definitely. And like when my brother would let me play his guitar or read his guitar player magazines, or I could spend the night over at his house.
Oh, yeah, that's cool, man. Hey, and
I mean, either one of them's house, really, you know.
That's really cool. So spending time with your bros.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell the listeners, Kirk's brother, his middle brother, or the middle brother in the family, is C.T. Fletcher. Pretty well-known bodybuilding and motivational guy. And Kirk said he's doing really well health-wise, if anybody was curious. When I told my kids, my younger son, one day, like about 6 months ago, goes, or a year ago, it was a while ago, and he sends me this thing with C.T. Fletcher, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy's cool. And then I didn't know he was your brother. And then when I saw that video, I said, hey, man, you know, I'm interviewing C.T. Fletcher's brother. They're like, no way. Because, I mean, they're young. They're adults, but they're young. They're like, really? No way. But anyway, so that was kind of interesting when I found that out. Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
Oh, man. We could have a whole different interview.
a whole podcast on that
they would find odd
shit from Kurt Fletcher.
Well, you know, just first of all, my taste in music is odd. It's like sometimes I even shake my head and go, really? I like that?
Well, yeah, you said Western Swing. I was surprised.
Yeah, I will go and like listen to like, in one evening, I'll listen to like Conway Twitty, The Carpenters, Parliament Funkadelic, some kind of 80s band like Go West or something like that, and then listen at like Cripple Clarence Lofton. I mean, it's such an extreme. It's like ridiculous. And it does, because I'm always torn between that Chicago blues type guitar player and a West Coast LA studio guy. Like those are, you know, like some of my big, you know, things, you know, my musical development, you know. Very cool. But me as a person, beside from the music, I don't like my guitar chord to be like tangled. I don't like things like really messy around me. It'll make me not be able to focus, you know, so I'm a little bit, you know, what do you call
ADD?
It?
I mean, OCD. OCD.
Yeah.
You know, they say that OCD is a manifestation of stress.
Really?
Yeah, it's an anxiety thing. It's not like a neat thing. It's like that's how stress impacts, you know, as obviously some people get pain in the back or whatever. OCD is one of those, I must say your house looks pretty neat, so you're doing a good job there. Might have you over here to fix up.
Well, that's not really my doing. That's the little lady's doing. Yeah. Crack the whip on the old Kirky.
Don't they all have to?
Yeah, right?
Hey, when you're having a bad day, Kirk, what do you do to make yourself feel better?
Put on some music. Listen at like music from the 70s, usually, or get nostalgic and listen to music from the 80s. Yeah, it's really pretty much all about music, you know. And I can pretty much get myself out of a funk by just putting on Joni Mitchell or some really old Howlin' Wolf Muddy Waters record or some funk music or something that just, you know, made me happy when I was a kid. pull myself out.
Yeah, you know, those times when you were young, when there was, the thing is, that what I like about those times is when you had no responsibility.
Exactly.
And that is so, like when I go on vacation, even if we go away for a night, I just feel, I just, it's like, I don't care. Yeah. I'm just doing nothing. Because life is like so much responsibility between family, bills, and business, and like, shit, it's just nice to, you know, turn off.
Turn it off. I actually like to turn it off a lot.
Yeah, well, that's healthy, to be honest. I should turn it off more, to be honest. That's great. Happiest moment or time in your life?
Happiest moment and time in my life. I guess one of them, man, I could maybe get it down to two, but
yeah, okay. Two is fair.
You know, that one of the happiest moments was just being a kid and totally naive to everything around me that's going on that bad, really, just being naive. And that was just happy. You know, you got your family around and everything is cool. You don't have any responsibilities. And I think doing my first record on a musical level, those things. Yeah, like doing my first record was probably, because, you know, I was still young and naive. You know, it was like kind of.
That's a big accomplishment, though, man.
Yeah.
That's huge. Doing a solo record.
Yeah, to see your record in the stores when there were stores, you know, great records in there.
It's weird, isn't it, that doesn't exist anymore. It's like.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, obviously my daughter and my girlfriend, I mean.
Sure.
Very beautiful things, but yeah. Those are narrow it down, the innocence of being a kid, though, that's a big one.
What's the food you miss the most not living in the States?
Actually, I wasn't really eating it too much in the States. But one thing that I do miss, I'm actually a vegetarian now.
Oh, cool.
Actually. Believe it or not.
No, why wouldn't I not? A lot of people are vegetarians.
But Texas barbecue is high on the list. Oh, my goodness. It's like...
Yeah, man.
Ridiculous. Just, and like, I would say Texas barbecue is up there. And then maybe like Japanese food. And then, but you know, most anything else I can cook here, you know. Mexican food too. Really good Mexican food.
See, now I got you. Now I got you going down the trail, man. Ding, ding, ding. Now the bells are ringing. Yeah.
Mexican food, because you know it's like in California. Come on.
Yeah, I would imagine it's pretty prolific there. Pretty good. Is there like a Swiss food or Swiss custom you really like?
Oh, there's a lot of Swiss food that I like. I mean, well, they got this thing called, what is it, like Rösti? And it's like hash browns. That's fantastic. Of course, I don't eat that much, but it's fantastic, you know. And Germany is right there, so, you know, all of the bratwurst and stuff. Of course, I don't eat that.
You're a vegetarian.
Yeah, but
you just get to watch.
Yeah, right.
What, in Switzerland, they speak French, German, and English, right? Is that?
Yeah, French, German, Italian. French, German, Italian, English. Yeah.
So, like, there's no problem communicating there. You didn't have to learn another language.
Well, you know, I should learn Swiss German because of where I live. Yeah. But most people, you know, I had kind of a lot of experience dealing with the language barrier before I moved here. So, most people can speak enough English so you can usually get by, or you can just point to what you want usually.
Yeah.
So, it's usually okay. The only problem is when you're riding the train and they're saying something in German and you can't understand, like that the train's going to be delayed or something.
yeah, I get that. But like, that's not a huge part of your life probably where you're.
No.
Yeah. So no. It's not a big deal. Yeah. That's good, man. Hey, do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Nope. Watching YouTube, maybe, but really, I really don't have any hobbies. I like old stuff. I like reading old magazines and collecting old stuff, records and stuff like that. But it's all kind of related to music.
You know? Sure, man. Hey, I'm going to ask you two more questions, and I really appreciate your time, Kirk.
Sure.
First one is, what's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And how much of this change has been intentional and deliberate, and how much is just a part of aging?
My personality has changed a lot. Maybe not my personality, just how I treat people. I'm kind of like Kirk, you know, happy guy, whatever, you know. But I've definitely been hip to more things regarding the world around me, and you know, things. The older I get, you know, because you know, before in my life, I've always been like, oh, whatever, music, 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 music. You know, the whole world could be falling apart, and I'll just be like in my world of gigs and guitars and amps and friends and records and all that stuff. But now, the older I get, I really see, you know, man, there's some really messed up stuff going on in this world.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the new record. It's sort of like my, you know, sitting back reflecting on my life up to this point. It's a lot of reflection on that record from many different things. And there's some stuff that you just shake your head and you go, is this really happening? Yeah. Is this real? So I've definitely been more, you know, aware of the world around me for many different reasons. Being out of the U.S. and seeing how the rest of the world views the United States is big.
Yeah. You know,
sure. What were you going to say?
Do things run more orderly over there? Less chaos?
Yep.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah. Yeah, I would definitely say definitely almost too orderly at times. You know, because I'm from California. It's like, hey, man, do what you feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? I think it's like that everywhere, man. Nobody's, nobody's really stressing out. Everybody's kind of about me, you know, do what I want kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's funny because my, like I said, my wife's from the UK and her mom will talk and she'll say, oh my God, what's going on over there?
Yeah.
You know, and the UK is not very dissimilar to the States, but still they're like, what the hell's, you know, happening over there? Just with a lot of the stuff that's going on. And I saw this thing on Japan like a couple of weeks ago about the train station. I'm from New York City originally and they were talking about the comparisons and like they clean the trains, the tracks twice a week. You could eat off the floors. There's no pollution.
Yeah.
And then they showed New York where there's freaking rats all over the place and shit and food and homeless people and like people literally taking a shit on the tracks. And it's just like,
man, but they got the funk in New York though, man. I'm kind of the kind of person that, you know what? I like both. I have to say, you know, like, yeah, it's super clean here. I love it. It's fantastic. My mountains and everything. But I'm a cat coming from like Compton and Lakewood and all of these places coming to somewhere. It's different than being born here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I think some of that fuels the music. New York is a certain sound, a certain energy, a certain feeling. And the same with LA, you know? And I can't. It's not the same. You know, you need some funk sometimes to me.
Man, my wife and I went back to the city about 2 weekends ago and we just chilled out and I just sat in Washington Square Park, just fucking like smoking a cigar. Just it was a beautiful day out. I was in heaven. Like the energy is so good there, man. You know, and it was like thousands of people. That's what I miss watching and. Because to me, I always learn from like these interviews. I learn because I learn about someone, and that puts a good idea in my head, and it's a different spin on things. And
absolutely.
So I like watching people because it's like a learning. Yeah. I like to learn.
You too. I'm the exact same way.
I miss that. Yeah. You know. So I know what you're saying. It's clean is good, but sterile also filters into the. Personalities, the sterile environment, sometimes, you know, shit can't be too boring either.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to have a little stuff going on, a little bit of some energy, man. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I could feel you on that, man. Yeah. Do you know, I think I asked him, if do you know Reggie Washington?
Reggie Washington is a bass player, right?
Yeah, he lives in, Yeah, he lives in Belgium.
Yeah.
I told him to call you because he was saying, man, I need a blues guy. I said, man, call Kirk Fletcher. And I thought you guys would know each other because, I mean, I figured everybody that's over there from the States would probably have a little meetup or networking group or something. Yeah.
Kind of a newbie still. You know, I got to make the rounds and stuff. I know Richard Cousins, Robert Cray's bass player.
Oh, he's over there?
Yeah, he's in Switzerland about an hour away, 40 minutes away.
Oh, that's cool.
He's a fantastic dude.
Hey, man, one more question. And it's kind of like we've been talking about. Knowing life is precious and time isn't infinite, what's the one thing that's kind of like most important to you as far as making sure you're using whatever time you have left wisely?
The most important thing to me is my health. Kind of.
Great answer.
Because without that, everything else is kind of like, you can't do shit.
Yeah. Are you good health? You okay? You're good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, good, man. And I mean, you know, too, with my family and the problems that it's had, it's made me even more aware of that and exercising and eating right and keeping it, you know, all of the crazy stuff to a minimum, you know.
Yeah, well, being a vegetarian will help you out with that a lot.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I actually feel really good.
That's great, man. Really good.
Yeah.
Health. I can't thank you enough for everything. I want to tell people, first of all, it's been real good talking with you and getting to know you. And I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Same here.
And I want to tell people where to get a hold of you. If you have not heard Kirk Fletcher, please check him out. He's just an amazing blues player. His new record is coming out in September. It's called Kirk Fletcher, Hold On. It is a beautiful, beautiful record. He's got anything from beautiful blues ballads on there where he's doing some really, really soulful stuff to literally blistering solos that, like, I was like, what? And I listened to them over and over again. I would go check out kirkfletcher.com. It's KIRKFLETCHER. And look on his website. He'll be telling you when the album's released. He's also be doing it on Facebook and Instagram. On Facebook, it's Kirk Fletcher's fan page, I think, or Kirk Fletcher, just the page.
Yeah.
And on Instagram, it's Kirk Fletcher Music. And it's Kirk, K-I-R-K. And also, he'll be touring extensively to support the record. Go out and please support Kirk and his guys on tour. Say hello to him. Tell him what a cool interview he did here. And I'll let you get a selfie with him. And
Totally.
If you say the secret word. And that's it, man. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I wish you a lot of success with their new record. I'll be promoting the new record too when it comes out. We'll be putting some links up on our page at Everyone Loves Guitar. And check him out. He's a great blues player, cool guy. Man, thank you very much. Any final words of wisdom?
Hey, I'd just like to say be good to everybody. Be good to one another.
Be good to one another and eat your veggies.
That's right.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Thanks again so much to Kirk Fletcher for spending time with us and being transparent and keeping it real and sharing all his stories. It was very cool. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Get in our newsletter. Sign up to get notified about future episodes and some other cool stuff we got going on. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice, right?
That's right.
Be nice. Go play your guitar and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.